Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Running the football dominated the weekend. Look what Derrick Henry did. Look what the San Francisco 49ers did. And to me, that just says a lot about what actually wins in this league. And I know D. Harlan, you're a defensive back. You're like, no, I want to see the ball being thrown a little bit. But running the football, it doesn't matter that you know what the play is, right? If I can move you out of a spot and still run the ball there, that's the ultimate physicality that you can have in this game.
Michael Robinson, NFL Network. A lot of muscle flexing in the run game. Going to be a key coming up on Sunday, I think, at least for one team. Stopping it for the other will be huge.
Sure.
For the Chiefs. And there's no doubt what Tennessee's game plan is. So flexing the muscles in the ground game, we'll see who wins that tug of war.
Well, and I think that's going to determine who wins this football game. I think the only way the Chiefs could lose on Sunday is by falling short in that running game. And I'm not talking about the offensive side of things. I'm talking about the defensive side of things. If Derrick Henry does what Derrick Henry's been doing since the Chiefs game, the Chiefs could lose that football game. And I think they probably will lose that football game. If Derrick Henry has 150 yards rushing and a couple of touchdowns, we're not going to
and
Miami.
30 carries.
And 30 carries, yeah. The days of us planning a trip to Florida to watch the Super Bowl with the Chiefs in it are numbered. I think that's ultimately what it comes down to. They have to stop Derrick Henry. And if they don't stop Derrick Henry, number one, Tennessee's never going to give up the football because they're just going to march down the field. And number two, you're going to, you know, give up touchdowns. You're going to give up scores. You're going to bleed that thing dry, and you're not going to have an opportunity to get your offense out there on that field. And I think the most overlooked and under-talked about part of this game on Sunday, Tennessee's defense is pretty good. I mean, again, they went up to New England, and how many points did they give up to Tom Brady and the Patriots? Not many. How many points did they give up to Lamar Jackson, the MVP?
12.
12 points they gave up.
The unstoppable juggernaut offense.
Correct.
Who's going to slow down Lamar Jackson?
Right.
Well, they were.
They didn't slow him down. They shut him up.
Gave up a lot of yards, but didn't allow him in the end zone.
No, and they made great plays. They got turnovers. They did good on fourth down. Like the
awesome
under,
on fourth down, yeah.
Yeah, the under-talked about, you know, side of the football this week, I think, is going to be
Tennessee defense.
Yeah. I do. I think it's a lot better than advertised right now, or a lot better than we perceive it to be right now. They are a good football team, and they're a good football team that has gotten better as the weeks have gone on, and Derrick Henry seemingly has gotten stronger as the weeks have gone on. So for me and for my money, I hear what Michael Robinson's saying, and I tend to agree with him. If they can't stop Derrick Henry, the Chiefs just aren't winning this football game. And that's why it goes back to the conversation we had about an hour ago with Chris Jones and the importance of getting him back into this lineup and the importance of Chris Jones being able to be out there and playing for the Chiefs. They are going to do everything in their power, Josh, to make sure that Chris Jones is out there on the field. And the big reason why he didn't play on Sunday is because they knew, well, if we win this game, we desperately are going to need him against the Tennessee Titans the following Sunday for the AFC Championship game. So you're hoping, you know, your backup guys are going to be able to hold down the fort. You're hoping they're going to be able to get the job done, which they did. And then you can bring Chris Jones back, hopefully healthy or healthier than he has been, and get him out there on the field. Because I still think without Chris Jones, it's going to be a tough, tough go. As good as Mike Pennell has been playing and those guys along the defensive line, not having Chris Jones is going to be huge in not being able to stop that running game. And if Tennessee gets the run game going and they're effective running the football, man, we're going to have some nervous energy inside of Arrowhead.
Their offensive line, too.
I mean, oh, God.
That's the other thing that doesn't probably get talked about enough because you have that great running back behind you.
But you have a great running back because of an offensive line.
That offensive line will do some damage,
too. As long as Taylor Lewan doesn't lose his mind, and cause penalties and whatnot, that offensive line is just like loaded, and they move bodies out of the way. I mean, the combination of Derrick Henry and that offensive line is as good a 1-2 punch as we've seen in a long time in a running game in the NFL.
Now, I can make the counter, too. the other way to combat this is, well, you are going to stop the run. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But the other way to combat this is score.
Let's just
score fast.
Get out
fast and try to get them out of their game plan. They're going to stay patient probably longer than anybody because I think that they know this is the way that they can. They know their formula. Mm-hmm. They know their formula to win, and going away from that formula would be bad for them. If you can punch in a couple of quick touchdowns and make it uncomfortable for them to continue to try to have long drives where you're running the football, then you've got a chance as well. So I do have some onus on the offense to get some scoring done early and have them play from behind and see what it's like.
So do you receive, if you win the toss, do you take the ball right away and go up early? Yeah, I think you do too. And I've thought that for a while now. You know, with this team, like, there are certain games where you have to go and do different things than what you're used to. And the Chiefs are used to winning the toss and deferring. I think every team defers now, right? Doesn't every team defer? Have we seen a team say, I'll take the ball, you know?
Yeah, like, the Houston Texans.
Yeah, the Texans did this week, yeah.
Oh, they did?
Yes.
I was in the can. I didn't see the coin toss. So I apologize for that.
Well, those are my favorite moments with you.
Yeah. Those are the things, though, that you have to do. I think if you're the Chiefs this week and you win the coin toss, you're not deferring. You're taking the football.
And
because the last thing you want to see happen is an 8.5-minute drive like the New England Patriots did in the AFC Championship game to start that thing off.
And it's not to say they can't do a 30. I mean, they scored, what, 35 in the first meeting? Right?
Yeah, 35-32.
I just don't envision that being.
No, it's a 24-21 type of game in my mind. That's the kind of how I see this thing playing out. Yeah, I think it's a low-scoring game. Because I think Tennessee makes it a low-scoring game. Because I think Tennessee controls the football, or at least tries to control the football, with the running game. And that's why, again, it's so important to be able to be playing from ahead in that game and taking the football and going right down the field and scoring an early touchdown and putting the Tennessee Titans at a 7-0 deficit, where now the pressure's on them. Because if the pressure's on them, and they're down 7-0.
I don't even think it's 7. Maybe, I think it's like 4. I think
you need to get
a 14.
The pressure, though, becomes on them that they have to make it 7-7. You can't allow yourself to go 3-and-out on offense and then give up another touchdown drive to the Chiefs, because I think if Tennessee falls behind 14-0 in this game, it could be a long day for Tennessee, and it could be over early for the Chiefs if that should happen.
Just drop a 50-burger on them, and you don't have to worry about it.
You don't have to worry about it, yeah. You absolutely don't have to worry
about it. They scored 48 points over their first two playoff games. So the Chiefs already got you by a field goal through just one game.
That's right.
If we're playing aggregate score.
But I don't know
if that's how that works, but
I don't know if it counts that way or not. But he's been, Henry's been over all but two of the games since, 20 carries.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned before, all over 100. Most of them are in the buck 50 range.
Yeah.
And his last three games, 32, 34, and 30 carries. Get a long day at the office if he's doing that to you again.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's the difference maker in this game.
And yeah, Baltimore, he had 30 carries for a buck 95. That happens.
Against the vaunted Ravens defense?
Yes. And in New England's best defense
best
on
defense
paper.
Best defense ever, yeah, right?
He had, 34 for a buck 82.
Yeah. I mean, he shredded two very good defenses on their home fields.
Correct. Both of which are probably considered, in a higher realm than the Chiefs.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, despite the fact that they've had, the best scoring defense over the last, half of the season or what have you.
Yeah.
More established season-long defenses.
Mm-hmm.
Shredded.
Shredded them.
Can't have that happen.
No, can't be shredded. Can't be shredded Chiefs.
Is that your mantra?
Yeah.
Don't get shredded.
Don't get shredded. Don't be shredded. Be grape nuts.
Don't get
be shredded. Chiefs. 913
completely disagreeing with your get the coin toss and take the ball plan. The Chiefs have to play their game. You know who wins the toss and decides to receive? Freddie Kitchens, Hugh Jackson's, the Browns. I rest my case. Not from the 913.
Do we have facts to back that up?
I mean, Hugh Jackson and Freddie Kitchens were, in fact, Browns head coaches.
I'd rather get the ball and score first.
I would, too, in this game.
Frank Clark was already thinking ahead during the game on Sunday. He appeared on NFL Network with Deion Sanders after the game, and in the midst of the game, he was already thinking about Derrick Henry.
I'm going to be honest, man. I was thinking about him in the third quarter, man. But to keep it real, I was thinking about him in the third. I'm like, man, that boy run that ball 35 times a game for 200. I say, we got to think about that. But no, just, yeah, you enjoy it, man. You enjoy the win. And, you know, you got to be able to get back to it. You know, it's Monday, have a short-term memory, you know, enjoy it. But, you know, I've been playing 5 years in this league, and I know, it, you know, enjoying too much can lead to. So, you know, enjoy it, but it's time to get back to our studies, man. Let's play our football. You know, every second counts.
I love it. Third quarter, this game's kind of over. So I was kind of thinking ahead, man, I got to stop Derrick Henry next game.
Mm-hmm. He's the guy that you think about.
That's the kind of looking ahead that's okay. I'm good with that one.
Yeah, that, I mean, yeah. Starting to realize, oh, God, we got to stop Derrick Henry.
Yeah. Frank Clark's one of a kind, finding that out. Mm-hmm. Your chance to win $1,000 coming up in about an hour from now, 8:30. Be listening for that keyword, your first chance to win $1,000. We had a winner on the show last week. Let's do it again.
Yeah, it can happen.
Your chance, 1,000 on the 30s, coming up at 8:30 and 9:30. Former Chief Danon Hughes on what it'll take to beat the Titans. Next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
Hour away from your chance to win $1,000. 1,000 on the 30s, your first chance to win. Coming up at 8:30, 8:30, and 9:30. Listen for that code word and remember 72881. Your chance to win $1,000 in the national contest. Time now to check in with former Chiefs wide receiver Danon Hughes, who drops by for his weekly visit.
Yeah, he does it every single Tuesday at this time. Brought to you by Mazarese Jewelry. Jewelry that's dazzled Kansas City for over 40 years. And Danon, at what point of that game did you believe the Chiefs were going to win?
I'd say after the first touchdown, after the kickoff return, right around there. I just felt like there was still the energy and the excitement, not just in the stadium, but on the sideline. When you watch that team, I mean, when it got up to 21, my stomach felt like it was queasy. Got up to 24, I was like, this cannot be happening. This cannot be happening in Arrowhead Stadium. And then when Mecole Hardman had the big return, you just kind of saw a resurgence of energy. And Patrick Mahomes just being the leader on that team. And I mean, I'm sure he slept very well that night because he left everything on the field emotionally and physically. And I just thought galvanizing the troops and Travis Kelce with the big catch after the drop early and, you know, flexing afterwards in the red zone, I just think that was like a culmination, like a volcano that was just kind of brewing that erupted at that time. And at that point, I kind of felt like, yeah, they had no chance.
You know, Danon, you played with Marty, and obviously he made some boneheaded decisions over the years that kind of hampered you guys as players. We won't mention the Gerbach-Annon situation again. But what Bill O'Brien did,
I know.
Well, there's some young people who may not know the situation, right? But if you're on the team and your head coach is Bill O'Brien, and instead of having a play to go for it on 4th and 1 and kicking a field goal, which would have given you a 4-score lead, and then that fake punt, how much do you want to just absolutely destroy your head coach after the game for putting you in a position to not win?
Yeah, I'm frustrated as a player. Obviously, you know, just like we've talked about, this is not the luxury of the NBA and Major League Baseball where you have a series. It's one and done. And you have to be prepared for that moment. And if you're a player, all you hear about every single day is to not be surprised, to be prepared for the moment, to don't allow the moment to get to be too big for you. All of those different cliches. And at that point, not so much the fake punt. I thought the fake punt was a good call. It was predictable, but it was a good call. I mean, at that point of the field, if you're ever going to try a fake punt, usually it's in that area of the field. And what better time to do it than when you're up multiple scores and you're trying to keep a high-powered offense on the sideline? So I don't disagree with the call. But I think even Andy Reid alluded to it in his post-game press conference that it was a good call. So when the other coach says there was a good fake call, usually that means it was predictable.
Well, sometimes I don't buy what coaches say because they're all like in that fraternity trying to protect each other because he knew like people were coming after
I think
Bill
that was
O'Brien.
A good football coach call because they really believe that they work on that stuff day in and day out, and that's they have to use those things at some point when it presents itself.
And let's face it, there was one person that was going to stop that play from not just being a first down, but probably being a 40-plus yard gain and probably in the red zone and them about to score again, and we just made the play. And anytime you have a fake field goal, fake punt, reverse or what have you, what you ask the player is you got to make one guy miss. You got to make one guy miss, and it's going to be a big play usually. So even if it was predictable and Daniel Sorensen did an outstanding job sniffing it out and not just running to the sideline and trying to prevent a big play, but making a tackle to prevent the first down, that was huge. So I'm not going to knock O'Brien for that. I think the fact that he got caught off guard at 4th-and-1 in the red zone, had to call a timeout and chose to kick a field goal, to me, showed the lack of preparation mentally at that moment. And that's exactly what you're coached to do and coached to be about on the field. So you would hope that your coaches would be able to match that.
Talking with Dannon Hughes here on 610 Sports Radio, former Chiefs wide receiver. We get set now for the second consecutive AFC Championship game at Arrowhead Stadium. I mean, things have just absolutely worked out, from the Dolphins winning on the last day of the season to the Patriots losing to the Ravens losing. Like, everything has worked out for the Chiefs, except now we got to stop Derrick Henry, and that guy's been a beast since week 10 of this season. First and foremost to you, do you ever have to tackle somebody that big, man? Like what what's that like to try to bring somebody down of that size? Like, I want to call all these people who played against Earl Campbell back in the day and be like, what's it like trying to bring some dude down like that?
Yeah, it's definitely a tough task, and you got to make some business decisions in it, how you're going to go at him. But I read a clip of Ryan Clark, who's on ESPN, does a great job as an analyst on multiple shows. He made the reference of, I can't remember which running back it was, but he said he made a conscious effort before the game that he was going to go full speed on the first carry, go full speed it was Brandon Jacobs against the Giants. He said he's going to go full speed into Jacobs, whether he whiffed, went flying by like the Roadrunner, or knocked himself out. He was going to set the tone by that one opportunity. He said Jacobs ran differently the rest of that game. Now, that doesn't mean he's not going to be productive, but it means that if you can make him look or stutter just a little bit because somebody came in and lowered the boom on him, that will help us tremendously. But it is a load, and you got to make some business decisions. And the thing is, it's not so much about what he does in the first quarter. It's the fact that at around that time of day, it's probably going to be about 20 degrees, 18 degrees, and it's the fourth quarter. It's about 4:30, 5 o'clock local time. The sun has gone down, and now you have to tackle him for the fourth quarter. And if you ask any defensive player and pretty much any big back, they'll tell you, you just get tired of hitting him. And if they're going to give him the ball 25 times, that means you got 25 opportunities to have to bring him down. And those safeties that he outweighs, you just get tired of hitting. And so we have to be in a position where we take that aspect of the game away from them, jump out on points, and force the ball just to be played in Ryan Tannehill's hands. And to me, that's going to be the recipe for success.
Well, and I think too, Dannon, which is what we talked about in the 6 o'clock hour this morning about the Chris Jones injury and why it's significant to get him back. I said it's significant to get him back for a couple of reasons, but one of them was that rotation ability that you have on your defensive line with him in there for that fourth quarter when guys are tired and Derrick Henry's heating up. You want to be able to rotate those guys on that defensive line, and not having Chris Jones could prevent you from doing that and cause some guys on the front line to be tired, and tired in the fourth quarter against Derrick Henry does not equal success.
Yeah, it's one thing to be in that front, that in the trenches, and somebody's pushing against you and you have leverage and you can move. But then when they continue to push against you all day long, and that's what that offensive line does. And if you talk to Will Shields or guys around town, former offensive linemen, they wake up hungry to run block. That's what they want to do. And even in the new age of spread offenses and so on, those guys still have the DNA of run blocking in their blood. So that's what they're going to come in. They know everybody in the country knows that they're going to run the ball and try to run the ball. And you have to have bodies, like you said, to rotate in, change up looks, you know, just not be that force that continues to have 300-plus-pound guys pushing them backwards and open up in a hole for a 247-pound guy to run full speed through. So, yeah, having an assortment of big men up front to be able to rotate in is essential, and hopefully Chris Jones can be that guy. And also, he's one of our most athletic D linemen. So Ryan Tannehill is an elusive quarterback, athletic quarterback, and we can't just put the onus on Frank Clark to create a pass rush or containment.
We're talking with former Chief Danan Hughes. The collective we, I'm saying the entirety of us, were very, very fixated with whether or not last week's matchup mattered in a rematch. Whereas this week, it's a more recent matchup that's a rematch, yeah. But we don't seem to be as preoccupied about it. Why is that?
Well, if you look at last week, you can make the argument that this season, the worst game that the Chiefs played, you can make an argument, was against the Texans back in week six. They penalty-wise, offense, defense, we lost in all three phases of the game. We allowed a quarterback to come in and beat us on our home turf. And even playing that bad, we only lost by 7 points. Well, going up down to Tennessee, that was the last loss we had before this streak. And we know exactly what they did. And Patrick Mahomes threw for over 400 yards on a bum knee, and we gave them points on a botched field goal that we could have made, and a fourth down, I believe it was fourth and two or fourth and three, where if we just get the first down, the game's over. All of those things happen, and we still only lose by 3 points. So, yeah, this team put 35 points up against us, but we were hampered severely, and they're pretty one-dimensional. I think there was a concern last week in Deshaun Watson, his magic, what he did the week before in the wild card round. You were just concerned about it. But Ryan Tannehill probably is not going to be the guy that's going to beat you, especially if you get up by 20-plus points. I think it's a different vibe about it, and the fact that they were able to produce like they did two days ago, adds a little bit more confidence to the fan base and just the aura around this organization. It's time. It's the Chiefs' time. The Chiefs fans deserve it. They've been waiting patiently for decades for this opportunity, and we can't let it drop again.
So you predict the Chiefs are going to win on Sunday?
Absolutely. I thought the Chiefs were going to win last week. I was concerned when it got up to 21-0, but as soon as they got it to 7 points, or at least got that first touchdown on the board, I kind of felt much better. That's when my confidence wavered, but my confidence is still strong. This is the year for the Chiefs, 50 years since. And just like we talked about years ago, or you guys talked about a lot with the Royals a few years back, it was time then, it's time now.
There you go. Danan, we appreciate the time as always, my man. Enjoy the game on Sunday, and we'll be talking about a possible Super Bowl trip with you on Tuesday morning.
Sounds good, guys. All right.
Take care. Danan Hughes brought to you by Mazarese Jewelry. Jewelry that's dazzled Kansas City for over 40 years.
Coming up at 8 o'clock, why this rematch means more. Coming up, someone was looking ahead, but in a good way. Next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
And that one sack kind of tells you the whole story. He was running around, chasing, missed him twice, and got back up and sacked him. I mean, that's how he's wired. So, and then he works at it. I mean, every play at practice, he's that way.
Andy Reid on Frank Clark, and there's no one that's had more of an evolution right before our eyes this season than this guy.
Well, both on the field and off the field, I think nobody has grown more than Frank Clark. He went from public enemy number one to a guy that we all now love.
He was a dominant defender.
Yeah. I mean, you could make the argument that he just turned back into who he was.
Well, I think you can make the argument that he finally got healthy, you know, and once he got healthy, it's amazing what you can do when you are a healthy athlete, and it's amazing what you can do when you are a healthy football player and you don't have a neck injury or something nagging you. Like, injuries really do hamper you in so many different ways because you try
they're
to.
They're not excuses, but they're excuses.
But they are. Like if you got an injury and you're favoring that side, then it affects what you can. Like it's just a huge snowball effect. And so I think at times they want to cover up these injuries. And then when they do cover up the injuries, everybody starts ripping the player. This guy's terrible. He's not earning his keep. And I think when you come to a new team and you get the big time contract, people expect results right away. Sometimes that's unrealistic to expect those results right away. And I think the one thing that we've learned from this defense and one thing we've learned from Frank Clark, and probably something we should have known, but we're fans and we react almost immediately, you've got to let things play out. You've got to let things marinate, and you can't judge a season on the first minute that you see somebody. You've got to take the complete body of work. And I think if you were going to parcel out your judgment of Frank Clark, what you were saying in September is a 180 of what you're saying right now. And you're looking at Frank Clark right now as a beast. I go back to the 42-yard sack that he, you know, ran around for 42 yards in 10.8 seconds to bring Deshaun Watson to the ground, one of his three sacks that he had on Sunday afternoon. Like that was a beast play. Frank Clark has been dominating since really that San Diego game down in Mexico. And it's no wonder that once Frank Clark got healthy, started playing really good football, this defense was able to take it to another level. And I think they're kind of feeding off of him. Clearly they're feeding off of Ty and what he's brought to the table and everybody else and Spags in the system. But it's not a secret that this defense really turned the corner when we finally got Frank Clark healthy and playing at the level that everybody knew he could play at when they acquired him from Seattle.
Him coming off the edge in a menacing man. I mean, that there's nothing better than that. Like defensively, to see that guy coming off the edge,
right?
And know he can't be stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's gonna get there. He's gonna get there. And he looks like he's in that. I mean, he looks the healthiest he's been, the fastest he's played
right.
since he's been here with the Chiefs, and he looks like a guy that's darn near unblockable.
That's exactly right. He looks like a man that's going against boys out there and owning football games, right?
No, not just the set the edge.
Right.
You know, I don't need the set. I wanted playmaker Frank Clark, right? You get mm-hmm. you're getting playmaker Frank Clark. I thought the impact of not having Chris Jones alongside him may be an impact in the playoff game. It wasn't.
No.
He was ridiculously good. And then I told you yesterday, go back and watch that sack. The circled around Deshaun Watson three times, mm-hmm. and they did their little dance. It was an incredible display of keeping after a play and athleticism to make that one happen. You mentioned, 42 yards or whatever?
40-some yards.
They measured that he ran on that one play to make that sack. Just an incredible, incredible individual play.
And laying on the ground at one point during that 44 yards and still getting back up and fending off people to get to Deshaun Watson to bring him to the ground. Like that to me right there, that's the play that will sum up Frank Clark this season. I mean, that was just an amazing play that he had at that moment in the game when the defense needed a big-time play. Frank Clark was able to go out there and deliver. And this defense has gotten so much better. I think as a fan base, you know, a good majority of fans, we were wrong by our judgment of Frank Clark. And we've been wrong on players before. Mine is Alex Gordon. I wanted him cut opening day 2011. I was done with him because he struck out, you know, how many times on that opening day. We've all had that player that we've been absolutely wrong on because we're judging way too early into their career or their time with a team to make a final determination of where they are. And look what happened. We were patient, or the team was patient, obviously. Frank Clark got healthy, and now we're seeing what he can do and why they went out and got him. And nobody's talking about his contract. Nobody's saying he's, you know, not a good football player right now, and nobody's criticizing Frank Clark. It's amazing what a healthy body can do for you, especially out on a football field.
I think when you pay a player like you paid Frank Clark or like you paid Tyrann Mathieu, like there's an expectation that goes above the stat book, right? Like there's an expectation that goes above and beyond what you're going to do on paper, because we need you to also be a leader. And that's something that, you know, obviously the Honey Badger was tasked with kind of changing the culture of that defense.
Was he tasked with it, or did he just embrace that?
I think it's a little bit of both, probably, because Andy Reid talked about it, you know, how it just kind of comes natural to him.
Yeah.
But that was something that I think that they went out looking for. They went out looking for a leader in the locker room. They looked for a leader on the field as well. And so I think whenever you have a guy like Frank Clark, that's also one of the expectations. And I think that may have been, you know, stat book aside, like that was one of the more frustrating parts about it was, man, you're not elevating the talent of the guys around you as well. And I know that Brett Veach was waxing poetic about, oh, man, I can't wait to see Frank Clark and Chris Jones lining up next to each other for years to come. Those guys are going to wreck. And you just didn't get to see that. So I think that was some of the frustration with Frank Clark because, again, when you sign a contract of that magnitude, and look, it's not my money, it's not your money. I don't care how they spend their money. But, like, when you sign a player of that magnitude to that kind of money, there is that expectation that transcends the stat book, and it's, hey, we need you to make these other guys around you better. We need you to lead by example. And over the last 7-8 weeks of the season, really since that Tennessee game, I mean, there has been a switch that got flipped by Frank Clark. He's got 8 sacks since that Tennessee game. That's obviously 3 included in the Texans game. But, I mean, the way that he finished that season out and the way that he was able to kind of zone out and say, I don't care what these people are saying, and I'm gonna keep doing me and I'm going to keep going. Like, back in the, you know, what was it, tackles for loss doesn't feed my family.
Yeah.
Tweet days, like when people were getting upset with Frank Clark then, like now just transition that based on that, and it's night and day.
I think the biggest problem that we all face with Frank Clark was when he was yelling at the fans and blaming the fans for not understanding the game or not watching. Remember when he had that at the beginning of the year? We're like, all right, hey bro, don't be criticizing the fans here. When he did that, I think that's when I kind of, you know, kind of soured on him a little bit. But I always had a feeling that he was going to be, once healthy, a pretty dominating force for this team. And if in my standpoint, I said from the beginning I was giving the Spagnuolo defense 4 weeks to, you know, kind of get settled in and work out the kinks and all of that kind of stuff. So if I was going to give the overall defense that time, you have to give the overall players that time too. And I think that's the other thing that we truly don't recognize. And talking to some folks around the NFL over the last couple of weeks, like just casual conversation, one of the things that they said to me, the reason we're seeing like Tennessee and Kansas City kind of emerge now is because you get rid of the preseason games. Nobody plays in those preseason games. It takes the first couple of weeks of the season and the regular season to really understand what you're going to do and to get a good feel for the players that are on your team. And so September now is kind of being used almost as a preseason type of feeling out process for teams that have a lot of new players, new coaches, and new schemes, because nobody's playing during the preseason because you're saving it for the regular season. So September is kind of turned into that feeling out process that you used to get in August. And so from Frank Clark's standpoint, it was a new scheme. It was a new system. It was a new coach. It was new players around him. Same with, you know, the Badger, all these guys.
Emphasis too. Yeah, like he had to take that step from being, I don't want to say just a guy, because he performed better than that, but he was kind of thrust into a new level.
Yeah,
coming to the Chiefs, right?
Exactly. Like he wasn't the alpha male dog out there in Seattle playing with the Legion of Boom. You had a lot of other guys that could, you know, you playing Richard Sherman for a while. Okay, so he wasn't in that category. He comes here to Kansas City, juxtapose those positions, and you've got all of a sudden a guy who has to be a leader, because there's nobody else like a Richard Sherman on this team, and now he's the guy that's getting paid the big money that's the big dog.
There was a lot that went into that. Frank Clark did have a funny with Deion Sanders after the game on NFL Network. Obviously happy about the win, but also was focusing ahead on what was to come. Deion asking him about bringing down Derrick Henry in the next round.
Man, to be honest, man, I was thinking about him in the third quarter, man. But to keep it real, you know, I was thinking about him in the third. I'm like, man, that boy run that ball 35 times a game for 200. I say, we got to think about that. But no, you know, just, yeah, you enjoy it, man. You know, you enjoy the win. And, you know, you got to be able to get back to it. You know, it's Monday, have a short-term memory, you know, enjoy it. But, you know, I've been playing 5 years in this league, and I know it, you know, enjoying too much can lead to. So, you know, enjoy it, but it's time to get back to our studies, man. It's playoff football. You know, every second counts.
I love it. He was running through video in his mind during the game. During the third quarter.
Well, it's a nightmare, really.
Yeah,
my God.
Derrick Henry's coming. Okay, what's next? All right.
Gotta stop this guy.
There might have been some business decisions that went into that tail end of that game, too, right? Like, let's save a couple of these hard tackles for next week.
I like how Danon said that, too. Yeah. Business decisions sometimes go in. Yeah, it's true.
You got to run up and decide if you're going to try to lay a guy out on the first move. But, yeah, it was great to see him take over last week, too. What was it, 3 sacks, four hurries?
Yeah, it was great.
Really, really good job by Frank Clark. And he has grown right before our eyes and helped this defense take that step, too.
Yep.
I mean, it can't be understated, he and Tyrann Mathieu's impact in a number of ways. But then once you get it production-wise, too, that's where it really begins to take off. They certainly took that Tennessee game personally, the first go-round, right? That was kind of the bottom. That was kind of the bottom. And it was the absolute turning point of the season. We'll discuss that. Plus your chance to win $1,000 at 8:30. Be listening for that key word. Sometimes we look for that spot in the season. We found it. Next.
Fesco in the Morning, brought to you by Santa Fe Auto Sound, Kansas City's home for car audio since 1967.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.